Welcome to Street Knowledge. I am Chris Graham, and I'll be joined by Crystal Graham. We'll be going over Virginia news, local news in the Shenandoah Valley, and more here on our show as it is Wednesday, March 18th. And, you know, we've got a lot to get into here, and let's bring Crystal into our show. Crystal, welcome.
Hi, Chris. How are you?
I am great, and hey, do you like the new show bumper music?
I definitely noticed the music. I said, "Boy, where's that music coming from?"
Yeah, we've got every time we do one of these, we're getting a little smarter at how we do them. But thank you for joining us out there. You know, we've got a lot to get into news wise today, and Crystal, before we get into the news, I guess let's talk about some things we were getting into last night. You volunteered your time with an effort that, of course, we've written about. It's a top story in the Augusta Free Press this morning. One of those kind of stories that kind of bring tears to your eyes. Tell our listeners what you were part of last night.
Sure. I got a call yesterday afternoon, I think a little bit after 4 o'clock, from Jeff Fite, who's the director of the Waynesboro Family YMCA. Who was trying to pull together a group of volunteers. The Greenleaf Grill, which is in downtown Waynesboro, owned by Chris Hollinger, was shutting its doors just temporarily for the coronavirus. But obviously, since the time frame is uncertain for how long businesses are going to be closing, they were looking to donate all their perishable food to the Waynesboro Family YMCA childcare families, as well as the warm shelter and some other people in need in the community as well. So, of course, when you get a call like that, you say yes, and that's what we did. Chris was, I guess you were kind of on standby. You were our runner, so to speak, when we needed things. But I went down there, put on some gloves, packed salads, luncheon meat, bread, soup, cheese, a little bit of everything. We were putting together these packets for families to pick up later today. And so it was everything, like I said, from salads to sandwiches, soup, pretty much desserts, pretty much anything he had in his refrigerators. And you wouldn't believe how much a restaurant has available and already prepared. I mean, this has got to be thousands of dollars. So I think our call came to you, Chris, when we needed some additional sandwich bags to pack things up for the families. And I know when you stopped by to deliver that, you also got a chance to talk with the owner of the restaurant, Chris Hollinger.
Yeah. And let me just add, as I was picking up those bags, you know, I kind of felt guilty. I went to the local Family Dollar store and it was kind of quiet in there. And the manager, nice lady, really nice lady, greeted me when I walked in and real nice, you know, from the register. And I went back. So my charge was to pick up as many gallon, quart, and sandwich bags as I could. And of course, in the back of my mind, I'm thinking about those guys who bought all the hand sanitizer and disinfectant in Tennessee and Kentucky or something like that. And I'm thinking, oh man, I don't want to be one of those guys. So I kind of reluctantly walked up with probably 50 or so of those. Of those containers, and I said to the lady, "Look, I'm not hoarding these. I'm not going to sell these." And she said, "Oh, don't worry, honey. Those don't sell very well. So get as many as you need." So I went back with a cart a second time, and then getting over to Greenleaf Grill, and it was actually you who suggested. I mean, this just came about so organically, I guess. You suggested I talk to Chris Hollinger on camera and Jeff Fife, the director of the YMCA, about this, and. You know, it's heartrending to hear the story. You know, I mean, just all the food and boy, I guess you had a chance to see. I mean, I'm guessing we're talking low five figures in food value here that he is donating to. Essentially, this food is going to go out to the local warm shelter, which is a local homeless shelter. It's going to go to families in need that the YMCA has identified through. It's child care program, and then eventually out, you know, if how much food is left over to other families in need outside in the community. But boy, you had a chance to see how much food. It just seemed like an endless array of food that is going to be going out in the community.
Well, what a great thing for Chris and his to decide to do with that, too, because, you know, it'd be easy just to, you know, clean out his refrigerator, throw things away. And he didn't want anything to go to waste. I mean, we were literally draining carrots, mushrooms, like everything, and putting them in plastic bags because our thought was, well, someone's going to want mushrooms on their salads or someone will eat these carrots, like literally letting nothing go to waste. I can't tell you how much hummus and spinach artichoke dip, one of his signature appetizers that he has there, not to mention the desserts that were in there. I mean, it was just, as a group of volunteers, I think there were so many people who were just looking to do something, you know, and had been waiting for a call to do something. So I think when Jeff started wrangling people together, it wasn't very hard to pull together these volunteers. And I think Chris Hollinger came out at one point and said, wow, you know, like he had never seen anything like this, the way that we all came together. And one of the things that was in your video when I watched it back that really pulled at my heartstrings was how Jeff Fife said that, you know, basically Chris just gave him a key and said, you know, take care of everything perishable, you know, and that's what we did, and how powerful that was. And, you know, Chris was there for a while we were all packing things up, kind of showing us where things were. And I think some, you know, employees were turning in keys. And one of the things that Chris said, I know in his video to you about his decision to close this restaurant, you know, businesses, especially restaurants, are making really hard decisions right now about what they need to do when it comes to their employees. And earlier that day, the Greenleaf Grill had posted that it was trying to organize, you know, either delivery or curbside pickup or something of that nature. And the governor, I guess, announced just hours before this whole effort kind of got put together that unemployment benefits would not be held up, meaning that anybody who files for unemployment as a result of coronavirus is going to get, you know, immediate relief. And so not so much of the red tape that maybe normally that you would have to go through to get funding. So in this case, I think he saw it as, one, he could preserve some funding for himself, you know, by not paying these employees. Ideally, that's what a lot of small businesses want to do. They don't want to have people lose their jobs, right? They want to try to provide that. And so I think that that's why a lot of restaurants are looking at this option of curbside delivery and that kind of thing. But in his case, as he thought, you know, I should cut my losses here, save what I can. And my employees have this option now of going to the unemployment office and getting funding through there. Also, I just wanted to mention, and I know I'm sure you want to weigh on this because you know a lot more about the governments and some of the things that came down yesterday that are going to be very helpful to small business and individuals. But the other thing that I noticed is that grocery stores, because they're limiting their hours and restocking nonstop and that kind of thing, they've all of a sudden had an immediate need for employees. So people who have been perhaps laid off from restaurants or other businesses that are impacted by coronavirus can actually immediate hires now happening. I know I saw Kroger, Martin's, and Walmart. So, I mean, it may not be the job that you're used to doing, but for families that are afraid of the struggle and feel like they, you know, need to continue working throughout this process, there are at least some jobs available right now.
Yeah, that's great news. And of course, I mean, we're shifting and these can, you know, these will likely be temporary type jobs. It's not like, you know, a lot of folks are being laid off who are being laid off from the industries that are being shuttered because of the restrictions on public gatherings and that kind of thing. You know, these will be temporary layoffs. We'll assume that, you know, a few weeks, couple months, whatever it may be, that, you know, you'll be back to your normal place. But yeah, you know, there are options, certainly. And that's great news. And, you know, plus, you know, we also have to go to the grocery store. You know, we still have to go to pharmacies. And so those jobs will be there and that'll be helpful. I thought I would go over, you know, there were so many things. The governor, Governor Northam yesterday, and we're getting these news updates, I mean, every day, every hour, it seems like. But once a day, it seems that we get something new from the governor's office with new, you know, new news, I guess, about ways that the state government is trying to respond and help people out. And I thought the most important, I mean, there's a lot out there, but I thought the most important, especially for our listeners out there, is probably the support for affected workers. You mentioned the no waiting for unemployment benefits, and that was, we have to assume, a key factor in Chris Hollinger's decision at Greenleaf Grill. And, you know, after the talk we had with him yesterday, I feel like I have a much better feel for how that industry is grappling. I mean, he, as you mentioned, Crystal, he yesterday during the day on Facebook is posting about how he's thinking about, you know, doing the curbside service and the takeout thing. And then, you know, after this news about the no waiting for unemployment benefits, he's able to say my 31 employees can be helped in the short term, and he doesn't have to potentially bleed himself out of capital, maybe fighting a losing battle. I mean, that's the thing you have to assume here is, you know, all of our favorite restaurants and everybody listening to this podcast, whether you're listening live or listening later, we all have our favorite restaurants, you know, wherever you live. I mean, here locally, we have several favorites and that you go to on a regular basis. I know, you know, we got a rotation. I'm sure we're probably not atypical on that. But they're all going to be making that decision. Do we try to you know, go the takeout route and survive? And I thought Chris was really revealing when he talked about how, yeah, you know, I guess he just did that calculus and said, you know, it may be a losing battle on their part. And he would rather keep his capital, so to speak, and wait it out and be able to, you know, come back when we all come back and start afresh. It's also, you know, before I get into the unemployment benefits thing, it's also interesting. I had to ask him, you know, everybody's world's changed since last Wednesday. And I asked him how his business was going as of, you know, last Wednesday when everything started crumbling around us in terms of the coronavirus and the response. And he said, you know, they had just gotten through the slow season. Winter is a slow season for a lot of businesses, especially in, you know colder climes like ours. But he said they had two great weeks. And then this hits. And of course, you know, Crystal, you mentioned to me that we were supposed to, you know, last night would have been St. Patrick's Day. That would have, well, it was, but it would have been a big night for restaurants. And so, you know.
Yeah,
you know,
Chris was actually nibbling on some corned beef that he made and commenting on just how sad it was. You know, the restaurant was definitely prepared. They had a lot of extra food and desserts and that kind of thing for that big rush. I had to stop by my vet's office yesterday to pick up some medicines for, not medicines, but, you know, your ongoing care type medicines, heartworm, you know, preventative, flea preventative, that kind of thing at the vet's office yesterday. And when I stopped by there, they were all wearing green. And I had to stop for a second and say, oh, today's St. Patrick's Day. Like, it never had even registered with me because of how much we've all been caught up in what's going on in the world.
Yeah, so no waiting for unemployment benefits is a key part of, you know, we assume the Chris Hollinger decision. He didn't cite it, but that's the timing of that news and his saying that the unemployment benefits, the ability of his employees, that was that was something that he mentioned. Northam has directed, the governor has directed the commissioner of the Virginia Employment Commission to waive the 1 week waiting period to ensure workers can receive benefits as soon as possible. I'm not sure if I've said this on a podcast until last Wednesday. We just did sports podcast here. I'm a hard news person too, but we hadn't had a big audience for you know, news podcasts until this week. So, but you know, people that I talk with all the time know that I've been advocating for this for at least the last month as we were thinking that this coronavirus shutdown may be a possibility. You know, waiving that week waiting period. Getting people basically, I mean, my instinct was to say, give people, let them sign up and give them a check when they walk out the door. I'm not sure if it's quite that quick, but certainly they're waiving the 1 week period. Enhanced eligibility for unemployment, a big part of this too. Workers may be eligible to receive unemployment benefits if an employer needs to temporarily slow or cease operations. That's, you know, the effect last night of talking with Chris Hollinger at Greenleaf Grill. If a worker has been issued a notice to self-quarantine by a medical or health, a public health official, and is not receiving paid sick or medical leave, they may be eligible to receive unemployment. That's huge. I mentioned on our show yesterday that a friend of mine has now tested negative. Thank goodness for him, for coronavirus. He was tested last Thursday, got the results back yesterday. Now, he does work for a company that does provide paid sick leave. But for those who would get that, who work in jobs where you don't get paid sick leave, Northam's order yesterday mandates that you're eligible to receive unemployment benefits, so effectively getting sick leave. In addition, a worker may be eligible for unemployment benefits if they must stay home to care for an ill family member or are not receiving paid family medical leave from their employer. So same thing, you know, essentially the government is stepping in to fill the cracks in the system. And we've been told, you know, I've seen the numbers out there, 30 million Americans who work in those front end jobs don't have access to paid medical leave or family leave. And so essentially now, at least for the duration of this crisis, the government's going to step in and take care of that. One other item under the support for affected workers, fewer restrictions. For individuals receiving unemployment insurance, Governor Northam is directing the Virginia Employment Commission to give affected workers special consideration on deadlines, mandatory reemployment appointments, and work search requirements. So that's, again, you know, if you're, we're going to go back, I'm sure, a lot to the example of the Greenleaf Grill since we spent time there last night. If you're one of those 31 employees there and you're applying for unemployment, this isn't an unusual situation. This isn't a situation where, you know, you need to get another job permanently. We'd like to presume that you'll be able to go back when Greenleaf opens again, hopefully soon, right? So, you know, unemployment benefits usually require, you know, the search efforts. You have to go out and do that kind of thing. This will waive that because we're it's smart. This is actually, for all of us who think government's not that wise and does a lot of dumb things and red tape and everything else, this is one where we're recognizing, look, you're not unemployed because your business is out of business and you're not unemployed for lots of other reasons. You're unemployed because of this. And so let's not make you walk through some red tape to be able to get your benefits. Let's just help you out here while we're trying to get through this. And these are all things, Crystal, that just, I'm shocked at how smart they are. If this is, you know, it's refreshing to live in a state where we actually have, it seems like, reasonable people in charge.
Yeah, absolutely. And I wanted to mention too that for those of you listening, if you don't follow our Facebook page, we're sharing lots of information on the local businesses that are choosing to stay open. You know, a lot of, like we said, a lot of restaurants, instead of closing their doors, are offering curbside pickup, delivery, even if they haven't done it before. So if you can, you know, especially local businesses, we're trying to share that information on our Facebook page at facebook.com/AugustaFreePress. The other thing I wanted to mention, you know, We've been talking about how the Stanton Creative Community Fund and some other organizations are really trying to find a way to help businesses during this challenging time. And Chris even mentioned in his interview, you know, there might be some funding available in some way to help with these major losses that restaurants are facing. And it's not just restaurants. It's most all small businesses have had to close their doors. And I want to talk a little bit about why that's the case, because there was another announcement that came from the governor's office yesterday. But before I do, one of the things that's also on the Facebook page right now is a link to the Shenandoah Valley Small Business Development Center. And right now they're taking a survey about the impact of the coronavirus on business revenues and employment. And this is apparently really essential data for them to gather in order to request basically economic injury disaster funds. So anyway, there's a SurveyMonkey survey that we shared a link to on our Facebook page. So if you're a small business and you're listening and you're wondering, like, you know, if resources are going to be available, filling out this survey will help bring some relief to our area. So that there's a link to that, or you can go to the Shenandoah Valley Small Business Development Center on Facebook, go to their page direct and fill out that. The other thing that came down yesterday, while Jeff Fife and the group of volunteers that he had gathered were at the Greenleaf Grill putting together this food to distribute to families in need, another release came out from the governor's office, and it had to do specifically with the number of people that you can have in any business at any time, unless you're what they consider, I guess, an essential business, which are things like manufacturing facilities or these grocery stores, pharmacies, things of that nature. One of the things that don't follow under essential services, unfortunately, is fitness centers. And so Jeff, at the same time that he's bagging up food and washing an enormous amount of dishes in the kitchen, in addition to that, he found out that he would have to close the Waynesboro Family YMCA because it would be very challenging with employees and then also patrons to limit the facility to 10 people in the business at a time. Again, this has to do with the whole self-distancing and limiting the number of people and possibly contamination and spread of the coronavirus. But Chris, you kind of were the ones on the front line. You were here, like, literally delivering that message to our readers while I was volunteering at that time. What can you tell me about that I haven't already kind of shared?
I think you've covered most of it. I would, the only thing I wouldn't say, unfortunately, I would think that I'm someone, Crystal, who works out regularly. And gyms, we're members of, well, actually technically three gyms, I guess. I think, you know, from a wisdom standpoint, I mean, if we're going to go through this, we're not quite in quarantine yet, but we essentially are. I'm calling it a shutdown. I'm not sure what the official term is yet for this, but we certainly are trying to, you know, use the distancing, to keep everybody from exposing each other potentially as a measure of controlling the spread of this virus. You know, gyms are places where, you know, there's close quarters, you know, and no matter what you do, if you're sitting on a piece of equipment, there's for example, the YMCA, which is just up the street from us here, and we work with them closely for a number of years. I've been a member for over 20 years there. They have great Nautilus equipment. They have the best Nautilus equipment in the area. But if you sit on a piece of Nautilus equipment and you use it, I mean, if you're working out right, you're sweating, you know, if you're not sweating, something's wrong. You're not doing it right because you're supposed to be working out hard. And I know that we would be extra vigilant. I mean, you're vigilant anyway, right? During the non-coronavirus times, you're hopefully wiping down all your equipment that you use. But, you know, it's just you're putting yourself in unnecessary situations, I think, in that respect. And so, you know, and plus, one thing you really don't do, I mean, think about this. As much as you wipe down, like if you sit on a piece of Nautilus equipment, you wipe it down after you're done with it. But when you pick up free weights, do you wipe those down? I don't know anybody that I've ever seen that actually wipes the weights down either after they use them or before they use them. So little things like that aren't part of your mindset. And plus, I mean, I guess what we're the more we read about this, it doesn't seem that that the researchers that I'm reading think that, you know, this virus is communicable very easily by air, but just to err on the side of caution, you know, we have to be aware of that. So I mean, you know, it's not, for the short term, it's obviously not good for gyms like the YMCA, both YMCAs locally. We work with both the Waynesboro and Stanton YMCAs and Augusta Health. We're part of that as well, the fitness center there at Augusta Health. But, you know, we just don't need to be part of that. Now, that does bring up, you know, I've mentioned once we as soon as, you know, we're working till midnight every night here at AFP to keep people up to date. There's so much news that it can be hard to it's been hard for us to get any free time. But I do want to start giving some fitness tips, things you can do at home in front of the TV, things like that, walking around your neighborhood, maybe jogging around your neighborhood. There are things you can do that don't involve going to a gym that can help you keep in shape, because, you know, I think it's going to be important for people that that, you know, we don't for a couple weeks, few weeks here, you know, sort of get out of our routines and make ourselves unhealthy, so that when we come out of this, that we're an unhealthier society. Hopefully, you know, if we do this right, we can chill out a little bit. I mean, we have to. So chill out a little bit and maybe figure out some new things to do. Fortunately, man, I tell you what, Crystal, I've thought about this. Think about if this shutdown had happened a couple of months ago in the middle of the winter and you couldn't get out and walk around very easily. I mean, we had a relatively mild winter here in Virginia, but just imagine if we were all cooped up inside and we had a bunch of 30-degree days to look forward to. At least on the schedule, the weather forecast for this week, we have a couple 70-degree days coming up. I know there are a couple of chillier days a few days down the road, but generally speaking, if we get closer and closer to spring, get closer and closer to April, more opportunities to get outside. I'll encourage our listeners out there, you can't go to fitness centers because of these restrictions. We don't know how long they're going to be in place. We definitely recommend take advantage of the good weather when you can get outside. And when you can't get outside and you're sitting in front of the TV, don't sit in front of the TV. I'll show you some tips how you can be active in front of the TV and be a part of that. But yeah, for the short term, fitness centers are going to be affected by this. Restaurants, we know, we've talked about that at length. Retail stores are going to be affected. And so, you know, it's going to be a lot of changes for hopefully just a short term. But, you know, it's definitely a disruption to life.
On the plus side, a lot of fitness centers, in addition to there's a lot of fitness gurus out there who are putting out kind of videos and things like that right now to help something specifically oriented towards kids, you know, and dance things of that nature. Most gyms are also providing you with some online resources, some video type programs that you can access as a member for free during this process. The Waynesboro YMCA provided too. I think I saw that the Stanton YMCA provided something as well. So at least members are getting some other resources as well. The other thing I wanted to touch on, again, because I was volunteering and being around other people yesterday, maybe for the first time really, was I was talking with a parent last night, and her husband were volunteering to package that food as well. And one of the things that they said, you know, I said, how's it going, you know, at home with the kids? And she said, well, you know, the first day was a complete disaster. And she said, you know, it was really hard to, you know, to kind of wrangle everybody into a routine. But she said that's what's really helped them is the second day, which would have been yesterday, they had a schedule. And they kind of like, you know, went over the schedule with the family. This is what we're doing at this time and that kind of thing. And she said that really helped their family get done the schoolwork. Because, again, just because these kids are home doesn't mean that they're not still needing to be educated in some way. So even though it's kind of gone to these online, or as Rod Mullins, our NASCAR reporter, said yesterday in the podcast you had with him, that for families that don't have access to internet, they're putting together packets for them. But there's still work to be done. These kids still have to move on to the next grade level at the end of the year, you know? So anyway, she just said that for her family, getting on a schedule and a routine really seemed to help. And so I thought maybe that advice might be helpful to other listeners there as well. The other thing I wanted to mention, of course, too, and we've posted a couple things about this on our Facebook page, but Augusta Free Press has compiled a list, and it's not just a local list, but it's a list of things that you can do with your kids if they're bored. You know, one of the things is in the summertime, you know, parents always talk about how their kids are going crazy. I was at the vet's office yesterday. She was on the phone with someone and I didn't hear exactly who she was talking to, but she says, I have two teenagers at home and they're going stir crazy. But as a result of that, in addition to posting some coronavirus links to things like the CDC and the World Health Organization and things like that, that are important to have at our fingertips, there's also links to things parents can do with their kids. And so it's everything from the National Aquarium, having some live feeds, to some story times, dance, fitness. I mean, it is a very extensive list and we're adding to it every day. I even shared on the Augusta Free Press Facebook page, I think the Wildlife Center of Virginia, which is located right outside of Waynesboro, is having
it's technically in the city limits.
Oh, it is in the city limits. I always think of it as being like right there at Chincapin, so I think of it as being Lyndhurst. But okay, so it's in the city of Waynesboro. But that is having some kind of a turtle type discussion today with live turtles. So it's a great way for businesses to kind of like engage the community as well. And like I said, a lot of the resources are national resources, but I figure at this point, you know, whether it's some of these live events that are being followed by questions and answers and that kind of things, we're all looking for things to do. You know, on the nice days you can go outside, but on those days that we're stuck inside, so to speak, families are definitely, you know, we're hoping that there are alternatives to just technology. It's easy to stick your kids in front of the TV or to have them on iPads and things like that. But I think what I've found is that there's a ton of resources out there for families that are looking for something a little bit different. So if you go to AugustaFreePress.com, on that right-hand column, there is a link to AFP coronavirus links, and you can look on that page for parents. And there's actually a for parents link there too. If you click on that, it'll take you right to that particular section of the links. The other thing I heard, Chris, and I know that this is still developing, is that and there was a lot of comments on this on the Augusta Free Press page yesterday when I shared a national news stories. But at the national level, there's some discussions of ways that we can provide, that the national government can provide some kind of a relief to families during this time. Again, the economic impact is, you know, it varies, I guess, from family to family, but everything from layoffs to reduction in hours to the amount of food that you've had to get. You know, most people are getting at least 2 weeks worth of food, you know, and that's causing some upfront costs that maybe families aren't used to having. And so as a result of that, the government's trying to figure out what is the best way that it can help families now. Initially, President Donald Trump was talking about some payroll tax type stuff and student loan interest being removed, more of like kind of the long-term kind of things. But I know that there's some discussion about trying to get some money in people's hands, perhaps even sooner.
Yeah, and that's the other part of this that I've really been pushing from a policy standpoint and from a thought process. This is really just a similar approach to how President Franklin Roosevelt, back in the 30s with the New Deal, approached trying to, you know, get the country out of the Great Depression. It took a while, but I mean, you think about this. I'm giving a history lesson now here. For those who didn't study, my degree is in American government and politics from the University of Virginia. I know way too much about this for my own good, I guess, but I think a lot of us who don't think about the origins of this assume that Social Security has always been there. Medicare's always been there. It wasn't. Social Security, Medicare, what some people deride as the welfare state, actually came about as part of the response to the Great Depression. And the whole idea was to get money in people's hands. You know, our economy is based on it's a demand-based economy. People need to keep buying things, basically. Of course, and we do often, and we have to buy groceries, so that's a staple of our economy. We all need food, we need housing. So, you know, but at some point you've bought your house or you're paying for rent wherever you live and that kind of thing. But if money is suddenly not being spent, that's when economies like, and really our whole world economy is a demand economy now. Those kind of economy can shrink, and that's why what we call recessions and even into depressions. So the way to forestall that, I guess, to further go a little further back, and hopefully I'm not boring people, but if I am, too bad. Before Roosevelt and the New Deal, actually, the response of Herbert Hoover, the president before President Roosevelt, the stock market crash of 1929 happened on Hoover's watch, and I don't want to blame Hoover for it. It just happened on his watch, just like you don't blame Trump for the coronavirus. It just happened on his watch. But the response of Hoover was actually to focus on raising taxes so that the government could run a balanced budget or try to run as close to a balanced budget as possible. That took money out of the economy, gave it to the government to pay, you know, to pay off its debts, and that's what sunk the country in the depression. It actually wasn't the stock market crash as much as it was that response. And so, I'll give credit to Steve Mnuchin, the Treasury Secretary, whoever it was, in addition that's sitting around President Trump, to be able to say, this is what we need to do. Payroll tax cuts were the first thing floated out there. Certainly a lot of criticism from people who advocate for workers, because payroll tax cuts actually are more helpful to people who make more money, and also to the business owners. And so payroll tax cuts sound politically popular, but they really aren't helpful to hourly workers, to people in working class and in middle class jobs. And so this approach is to say, basically, let's give $1,000 or more. Right now, it's still something that's being negotiated between the administration and the Congress, both the House and Senate. You can presume the House is going to be very enthusiastic for this. The Senate is run by Republicans. We'll see. I mean, obviously, they're going to eventually support it because they have to. There's a lot of Republican seats up in the elections this year, and I don't think any of them want to be sent out in a tidal wave if they were to kind of block this. And Crystal, are you okay?
Yeah, I'm fine. Why?
Okay, it sounds like you're coughing.
Oh, well, you know, it is allergy season, and that's one of the things when I was volunteering last night at Greenleaf, I sneezed a couple of times, and you know, everybody kind of looks at you, and I'm like, it is allergy season. Yeah, I haven't taken my allergy pills this morning, so just
Okay.
ignore me.
I felt like I better say something about that on the podcast, just so that those who are listening would realize that it's allergy season. I just had to prompt
Yeah.
you on that.
I can't find an easy mute button on this, so I'm just having to go with it. So I do apologize.
Okay. Well, so to get back where I was there, then the idea is to give, you know, $1,000 or more to each taxpayer as soon as possible. Mnuchin said yesterday, the Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin said yesterday, as soon as in the next 2 weeks. And this again presumes that you know, we can get the Senate and the House to sign on to the same bill and get it going, and gosh darn it, they better get it in as soon as daggone possible. Try not to cuss. I'm not always good at that, but as soon as they do that, yeah, checks go in the mail, and what that does, it's a stimulus. It's, you know, we bailed out the banks in the crisis of 2008, 2009. A lot of criticism about that. A lot of studies have been done on that. Was that the right approach or not? And I think this is the right approach to me. This is getting money in the hands of consumers. Consumers, obviously, what we'll use that money for is we'll use it for essentials. We'll buy more groceries. We'll do what we need to do there. And the more we do that, yeah, it's going to stimulate economic activity, keep economic activity going. You know, I'm not sure, you know, if this shutdown doesn't last a little longer. I mean, President Trump warned told us, you know, has told us in the last couple of days, he's had some conflicting messages, which is not surprising for President Trump. He's said 8 weeks. He's also said into July or August. I think the 8 weeks is more realistic, but 8 weeks gets us to the middle of May. If you know, I wouldn't be surprised, even if it's just the 8 weeks, that we wouldn't see a second stimulus. I've seen a price tag on the what this would cost, the $1,000 per taxpayer thing, and it's around $200 billion. You know, you can ask where the money's coming from. If you're one of smart policy wonk, you say, where's that money coming from? We just keep borrowing it, you know? I mean, that's just what it is. We the president had already submitted a budget to Congress before the coronavirus outbreak that was contained a $1 trillion deficit, which, you know, this was before any economic slowdown that we can presume is coming from this shutdown. That was an unprecedented budget deficit proposal in a time of economic strong economy, I guess I should say. You know, usually you run that kind of deficit relative to GDP when things are slow. The president, his tax cuts for the wealthy and inability to rein in spending leads to, you know, massive deficits. So if it's okay to run a deficit when things are good, so you can give money to your wealthy buddies, it's hard to justify not running an even deeper deficit when it's something that needs to keep the economy propped up. And so I guess the amount of money that I've seen associated with the $1,000 is around $200 billion. I know these are crazy numbers for the average person to listen to and hear and make any sense of, but it would not surprise me if we wouldn't see a second stimulus maybe coming if this persists past the middle of May for some reason, just to keep the economy as much as possible moving forward. So we've also seen, Crystal, and I think this is an important thing to note. We didn't talk about this in the context, but it relates. The tax season has been extended. I think it was 90 days, which will be roughly July 15th now instead of April 15th, which is an important thing for a lot of folks. If you owe taxes, and we're among that group, if you have to pay into taxes, certainly that's also a windfall in a sense. You at least don't have to write that check for at least 90 days after. So that can be a help too. These are all little things that hopefully can add up to some decently big things for a lot of folks.
You know, I think the important thing during this time is that, we're all looking out for each other. We've talked about how restaurants can help the community as a whole through some of the things that happened last night with the Greenleaf Grill. But the community is stepping in a lot of ways. And I just want to, again, remind people that if you're looking to volunteer or you know someone who needs assistance, even if it's yourself, there are some websites that have been set up in our region specifically to make those kinds of requests. And so if you do go to AugustaFreePress.com, there are links to if you need to request assistance, if you want to volunteer, if you need to file that unemployment claim, all kinds of resources right there at your fingertips. So I encourage you to go ahead and do that as well. Chris, were there other things that there's so much information? I think we were talking about our normal amount of stories that we publish per day has probably quadrupled, if not more than that at this point. Yeah. There's so much news related to the coronavirus that even our front page isn't holding the amount of stories that we publish in one day. So you almost have to go to our news section to read everything. But all the things that we've talked about, there's generally stories on our website about as well. There's everything from, I know UVA canceled its commencement and it's, I guess its entire spring season, didn't cancel it, but it's going to continue with online learning. And I'm sure that many other universities will probably follow suit with that as well. We have a niece in West Virginia who's a nursing student and just pretty much devastated that her, commencement exercises are likely to be canceled. On the other hand, she works at a hospital. And so I think as a nurse, she kind of gets it, you know, she kind of understands what's happening around her more so than maybe some other students. You know, you work really hard to get to this point. And it's hard to imagine something like this. You and I were discussing yesterday, that there's really been nothing like this in our lifetime. We're both in our 40s. I'm 43. Chris is 47. We haven't really had to deal with anything. When this first happened, the sense of community reminded me a little bit of September 11th, because I think right after September 11th happened here in the United States, we were kind of all checking on our neighbors, giving each other more hugs, you know, There was a real sense of community around that. Whereas now we still have that, we're still outpouring and checking on our neighbors and things of that nature. I've seen a lot of really heartwarming things happening. We can't give those hugs. I think last night when we were volunteering, all of us were kind of giving the elbow touch, you know, the arm touch or whatever, just to kind of say, hey, and that kind of thing. And me as the kind of person I am, it's very hard for me to remember sometime not to give somebody a hug that I haven't seen in 3 months or something like that. So that's a little bit challenging too. Is there anything else before we wrap up? Because there's so much that we could talk about and so many stories that you have published on Augusta Free Press. I think my best advice might be for more information, you know, continue reading your national news, but also go to AugustaFreePress.com and check out our Facebook page, Augusta Free Press, on Facebook as well. Anything else you want to add before we wrap up?
I guess I've got a quote on my screen here that I've seen in recent days from a 17th century French philosopher, Blaise Pascal. And this is the political theory nerd in me saying this. All of humanity's problems stem from man's inability to sit quietly in a room alone. And when you think about that, I think this is my Andy Rooney moment. Back in my day. Our inability to sit quietly in a room alone, that's why, you know, people fight in bars. That's why we have wars, you know, from the micro level to the macro level, right? We seek human interaction, and then we don't always do well with it. But I will go with what you had to say there, Crystal. Yeah, what I've seen largely is so positive. I mean, I guess because we're coming off of the feeling from last night that something that could have been, and obviously in a lot of ways still is, for a local business owner going through a really tough time, obviously for him personally and his business. But instead of letting it be a negative, he's trying to turn it into a positive. And I'll say this too. I feel blessed that at Augusta Free Press that we've been able to help disseminate that story. And I mean, I haven't looked at it now. Maybe Crystal, while I'm talking, you can look up the numbers. But when we last looked, it was over 9,000 views on that particular video that we did, a little 5-minute video where we talked with Chris Hollinger and Jeff Fife, and, you know, 119 shares, I think it was. And, you know, I think that it heartens me that Chris did what he did, but it also makes me feel better that so many people were touched by his story that they've decided to watch and share and comment upon. And, you know, I think that, I mean, I wrote a story about that video we did last night too. And I led the story with the first place that we're going to go out and eat when this is all over is going to be Greenleaf Grill. And we have a new favorite business owner, and that's going to be Chris Hollinger, just because of what he did selflessly. And I would hope that a lot of folks out there, just in his example, let's go pack his restaurant when we get out of there.
Yeah. Well, he set the example. He set the bar for people in our community, in my opinion. And I hope other restaurants that are making the same difficult decisions, you know, will follow suit. There's so many families in need right now. And if you're going to take the financial loss either way, why not see those perishable foods in particular, you know, go to good use. So, I wanted to wrap up, Chris, and this is really sentimental for people. I want to wrap up with something that I read, and it's kind of like, it's not really a meme. It's kind of something that somebody shared yesterday, and I had several friends who this meant a lot to and shared as well. And so when I give the author of this, maybe we can kind of sign off. But this is just kind of a very sentimental way to end. And again, I'm coughing because I've got allergy season kicked in. I've got that tickle in my throat right now, but I'm going to get through this because I think this is something that touched me and it might touch you. So here I go. When this is over, may we never again take for granted a handshake with a stranger, full shelves at the store, conversations with neighbors, a crowded theater, Friday night out, the taste of communion, a routine checkup, the school rush each morning, coffee with a friend, the stadium roaring, each deep breath, a boring Tuesday, life itself. When this ends, may we find that we have become more like the people we wanted to be, we were called to be, we hope to be, and may we stay that way better for each other because of the worst. And that was written by Laura Kelly Finucci.
I think that'll be the way we send off, not with the cough, but with that great poem. So thank you, Crystal Graham, for joining us. Thank you, our listeners out there, for joining us. An archive of this podcast will be available on the Augusta Creek Press website. And for Crystal Graham, I am Chris Graham. We are signing off. Have a great day, everybody.